Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Здравствуйте, comrades, and welcome to a brand new decade, a brand new podcast episode. It's 2020, the royal family are being disappeared, a man called Boris leads the nation, and an iron curtain now separates us from the rest of Europe. Everywhere, traditional Russian pastimes of days gone by are back in vogue. The UK has become a one-party state. People denounce their neighbours for wrongthink, and the bourgeoisie protests to anyone who will listen that their country has been stolen from them. And behind the scenes, everything is controlled by bot farms in Vladivostok. So sit down, pour yourself a vodka, and relax. Welcome to That's Life. That's right, ladies and gents, we're back for another year of glancing sideways at the world around us. I'm Benedict Spence.
And I'm Andy Shaw.
And on this podcast, we'll be opening up a bottle of wine together and poking fun at the words, people, and ideas that have popped up in the news over the past few weeks. Today, we're joined by comedian Konstantin Kissin. Konstantin made international headlines in 2018 when he refused to sign a university behavioural agreement form before a gig, which sought to ban jokes which could be considered offensive, and insisted that his humour must be respectful and kind. Konstantin successfully dodged that bullet, but sadly is no longer allowed to play universities, which is why he's ended up here. Konstantin, it's great to have you with us. And before we get started, we can just assure you that this is a safe space for you and your humour, so please do have some wine and be as rude and defamatory as you can possibly be. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, thanks for having me.
How have you been?
Very good, very restful time over Christmas, so I'm back ready to annoy people.
Are you optimistic about 2020?
I was, yeah, but I don't think that's happening. With some of the stuff we're going to be talking about, I don't think my optimism is going to last very long.
Australia at fire, the world at war. I mean, I'm still quite optimistic, but...
Where's the world at war? That people keep saying that. Where's this war that I've missed?
It's not like Australia, it's a slow burner. It's going to get there. Now, Konstantin, Andy here has informed me, and our listeners might have cottoned on to the subtle hints, that you are originally from Russia.
Guilty.
So being an expert in all things Russian, which we assume you are, should we be worried?
About what specifically?
Exactly, that's a good answer. We don't know. That's how they operate. What do you think about the way that Russian-Western relations have progressed in the last few years? I mean, does that concern you?
Well, it's been an interesting time to be Russian in this country, especially for me, because I live in a small town where I'm the only Russian. Didn't used to be the case. I live in Salisbury. Just a joke. It's a joke. You said I could offend people. It's a joke. I don't live in Salisbury. I've been there like once, and that was for work. Look, it's a funny time. But the thing is, you know, like you did your intro. You did all these Russian stereotypes. That apparently is now called Russophobia. Like, we keep inventing these new phobias, and that's one of them. So you're going to be fired.
On the cards.
That was on the cards. That was happening anyway.
Yeah. We shouldn't dwell too much on Russophobia and what's happening there. Konstantin, has there been anything non-Russian related that has really stood out for you in the past few weeks or months?
Yeah, I really enjoyed Lawrence Fox's appearance on Question Time. I just thought that was so brilliant. And I wrote a piece for The Telegraph about it. It's amazing to me what happens when someone says in public what most people think. And then the vitriol that comes in response to that, which is something that I've experienced as well myself. It's like we somehow have ended up in a position where having the opinion that most people share is now like the wrong position to be. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely right. I think it was lovely how the public expressed their support. Normally people cheer or clap, but in the Question Time audience, when the member of the audience said, you know, you're just a white privileged male, and there was just a spontaneous groan, just a massive groan from the audience. Oh, God, do we have to listen to this anymore? So I think our sort of collective expression of support for anything should just be mass groaning from now on.
It's a very British response, isn't it? A bit of tutting in there and you're well on your way. But it was that part of it, but also the part of it where he didn't clash, but they had a conversation with Shami Chakrabarty about the Labour Party leadership election as well, where he was asked which candidate he's supportive of, or most supportive of, and he said Keir Starmer, and Shami Chakrabarty instantly went, well, none of the women. as if that's like how we pick people now, just like, oh, you've got this, you've got a vagina, there you go, you're fine. It only makes sense in their crazy world. But that crazy world is now creeped out everywhere. And suddenly, I said this in my piece, you know, we've sleepwalked into this situation where we use words like white, male, straight as pejoratives. I don't understand how we got here.
No, it is. But I do get a sense that there's a bit of a change in the air. I don't know if this is true yet, but there seems to be a little bit of an opening up. And people are just a little bit sick of it. And there's a little bit of a sort of, this is going to change. And whereas you've had all the sort of loud and the activists and the people hectoring, the people accusing other people of the worst possible thoughts, and the institutions have sort of actually run scared, and largely because they quite often don't know what they stand for anymore themselves, they sort of adopted this outlook. And I get a sense that there's a bit of a pause, actually, are these people on the winning side, or is the winning side elsewhere? It's funny, I was speaking to a guy who runs the Backyard Club where we do Comedy Unleashed, and he was saying that he can see the act even in the last few weeks, whereas they bang on about, you know, Boris and Trump and their sort of usual predictable targets are sort of holding back, and there's a sort of sense of unease about what the targets are, and they're not quite sure what the new target should be. So I get a sense that there's a little bit of an opening up going on.
Yeah, there is. And it's a funny time as a comedian as well, because as a political comedian, I'm keen to satirize both sides. But it's quite difficult right now because Boris hasn't really messed anything up yet, which you'd expect, really. That is, a political comedian, you were like, Boris is prime minister, brilliant. There's going to be something funny to talk about. But actually, he hasn't really done anything that you'd go, oh my god, this is going to be great for me as a comedian. It hasn't really done that. So you talked about a one party state. I mean, that's kind of where we are. I think he's going to be in power for a very long time.
But it's easy with the Labour Party. That's the difficulty, because I'm a bit like you. I'm looking at, you know, Boris and Don Cummings and all the various different characters, and actually it's just the Labour Party that I find funny. Spontaneously they make me laugh.
Yeah.
So it was like Lawrence Fox's response when the thing you highlighted, when Shami Chakrabarty said, well, what about the four women? And his response was, well, all right then, any of the women, just a woman. As if Keir Starmer, the single man, is actually holding back these great performing women MPs. You know, Jess Phillips, for example. I mean, she's not exactly mousy, is she? She's not a woman who doesn't know how to speak. I mean, it's not like Keir Starmer is holding her back and she actually needs him to help her sort of switch the microphone on and usher her forward. You know, she's probably the loudest politician we've got. I mean, the fact that she's got nothing to say when she opens her mouth is an entirely different question.
Yeah, she knows how to speak, she doesn't know what to say. Yeah,
that's exactly right.
But to go back to another word that we've had on this podcast before, which would be problematic, isn't that a bit problematic, though, that we can only now make fun of the Labour Party? Because that's punching down. That's not allowed in the sort of the wokerati. They're off limits.
Why is it
jokes.
Punching down? Are you saying that they're inferior?
I mean, have you seen them?
Well, see, this is the thing that doesn't make sense about this whole idea, is that how do we define punching down? Is it so punching down is making fun of a party that's not in power? Well, these are very powerful politicians nonetheless, right? Yeah. So I'm making fun of Jeremy Corbyn, as I frequently do. I agree with you that audiences sometimes perceive that as punching down, but I don't see how that's punching down at all. He's a politician.
Well, Keir Starmer is a former director of public prosecutions. You know, I mean, the interesting thing about the Labour Party candidate list, when you look at them, is just the number of barristers and lawyers involved. And it's actually an argument between actually quite an elitist bunch.
Is that different than the Tory Party?
No, but it's no different.
It's not quite as successful a set of barristers.
It's certainly not the Labour movement. That's the, you know, you look at someone like Richard Bergen, he's the GMB, what's that now? The General Municipal Workers and Boilermakers Union? I forget now. But it's, you know,
Is it?
I'm not sure. No, really, the boiler.
Explain why you can never find somebody to come and fix your boiler if he's in charge of the union.
That's right. Well, they sponsor him, but he, you know, he's an ex-barrister. It seems to be an argument amongst actually, you know, some fairly elitist people, and you know, someone like Keir Starmer, he's one of these people who sort of thinks, you know, it's all about rights, but I'm going to manage your rights on your behalf. It's a very sort of paternalistic view. There aren't really many people. Probably Ian Lavery would have been the only person. NUM, I mean, having said that, I didn't know there were any mines left in the country for the National Union of Mine Workers, but it's probably one of the few people that's actually, you know, come up from a sort of a working union.
Andy, so moving on from Lawrence Fox, has there been anything else that stood out for you in particular?
Well, the event that struck me was the judge's ruling. It was Judge Robin Possel who made the judgment on the vegan, who claimed that ethical veganism, to be precise, should be a protected characteristic under the 2010 Equalities Act. And the guy, right, I'm going to read this out because I can't really remember. I'm not sure I'm going to get it right either. But I think it's Jordi Casamitjana. Anyone on that?
It's one of these things. Did he play for Barcelona? I have no idea.
I think he is Spanish, actually. Yeah, no, to be fair.
What a guess!
I think that is a very, very good guess. But I've only ever seen it written down, so I hope I've got that one right. But you know, he took the League of, I think it's the League Against Cruel Sports, who he worked for, to court, and they've now said it's a protected characteristic. A protected characteristic has to meet one of these criteria. So it has to be worthy of respect, not incompatible with human dignity, and not in conflict with fundamental rights of others. But the problem is, it's not about equality, it's about a set of rights. So now it's protected, how's that not going to conflict with other people's rights? So if he's, you know, working in a supermarket, is he going to refuse to, you know, handle meat products or work with a work colleague who's wearing a wool jumper and a leather belt? So once you start to protect it, it's just going to become utterly ridiculous.
And you can't make fun of vegans as well now. Is that right?
Well, you can, Constantine.
Can I?
Yeah, feel free.
Oh, if I want to get cancelled again, yeah, I can do it. So that's the judgment. So it's now, so it's like race now, is that it? Like,
well, it's, yeah, I mean, you know, the act is there to stop discrimination, which is absolutely worthwhile. But because it's now belief and religion, and you can start to redefine what that means, that they can be, you can put in a claim for it to be a protected characteristic, which is now what this is. So saying
that vegans have smelly farts is equivalent of using the N-word, basically, is that kind of where we are?
Well, I suppose it depends on what you're accusing the smell to have come from. So was it an animal product?
I love the level of research on this podcast.
He's eating too many lentils. I don't really know. Excessively smothering himself in corn. I don't know. There's all sorts you could get up to.
Well, before we move on, I just did want to bring us back to one other moment that had caught my eye, and it's slightly moved out of the public consciousness now. But you may remember over the festive period that there was a brutal murder that happened in West London. Does anybody remember this? Involving a certain QC and a certain fox.
Is it Joe Morm?
That would be the one. And it just I don't think we need to dwell on this for too long, but I did just want to put this back into people's minds that, yes, that is the thing and that did happen. But it was a slightly fantastical end to what has been a farcical year. The idea of one of the lead protagonists in the campaign to stop Brexit being catapulted into the international sphere, at the idea of him bludgeoning a fox to death in his back garden with a baseball bat, wearing his wife's kimono.
A slightly too small kimono, green colour, I believe.
I struggled to be interested in this story, because I honestly did, because I was still on the phone to my mum and I was scrolling through Twitter and I said, oh, mum, there's this story about a guy who killed a fox. And she was like, yes, what is problem? We don't get this whole thing in Russia. It's like, oh, he killed an animal. Oh, God. You know, not really a big deal to us. Why would you wear your wife's kimono, though?
It's a strange thing, given that he said he saw the animal trapped and his claim was that it was in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Presumably it wasn't going anywhere if it was trapped. So quite why he felt the need to grab the first thing rather than put on something
There's an emergency. Wife. Give me a kimono stat.
Unless it's some sort of ceremonial kimono for dispatching foxes. I just think the fox is in a really awful place as it is. It's a very undignified way. At the very least, he could have put on a pair of trousers before he dispatched it.
Yeah, I think he probably put on his wife's kimono so he could blame her if anything happened around it. But did you see? Anyone who's listening to this podcast, I imagine, has seen the tweet. But he also tweeted out, "I am not your average neutered city dweller. I just killed something." Which it just says a lot, doesn't it? It's you know, you think us Remainer QCs are like a bunch of emasculated, pathetic men. We're not. We go out to the garden in our wife's nightdresses and we bludgeon animals to death properly. Bludgeon them, kill the bastards. That's what we do. You think we're soft? We're not bloody soft. We're dead hard us. Or, the other way of looking at it is he just thought, that fox, that says to me, Brexit voter. I've gone through the courts. I've used my time, my energy, my money. I've not stopped this thing. But that fox is trapped now.
I do.
Bloody gossip. Nigel Farage, take this!
Well, this is the thing. I did think that somewhere else in London, as it was happening, arch-Brexiteer Liam Fox suddenly sat bolt upright in bed thinking something dreadful somewhere has just happened.
My son!
Fox is a recurring theme of this podcast this week. We've gone from Lawrence Fox to the fox to Liam Fox.
Do we have any more foxes that we can bring up?
Is there another fox? Okay, no, it's not a recurring theme at all. I just made it up for no reason at all. There we go.
Well, Constantine, you might have another chance to bring up foxes because listeners to this podcast will know Andy is compiling a dictionary of words that have taken on a different parlance in common usage. That is to say that words that once upon a time meant one thing but now are often used to mean something else. Now, I don't suppose you have a word for us, and I don't suppose that word is fox.
No, it's not fox. Well, have you done woke? You've done woke, I'm guessing.
Done woke.
I think that was pretty much the first word we did.
Sure you did, because that's a word very that's completely friend of mine transformed, that hasn't it?
Mm.
It was interesting. There's a thing called on Twitter called hashtag no debate, which I find very interesting because it's essentially a way of saying that we're not supposed to have an opinion about certain things. So we had a guest on my show a few weeks ago, Harry Miller, who was the guy who got a call from the police telling him to check his thinking for a tweet that he put out about transgenderism or something like that. And he was telling us that there's now, essentially when people talk about the trans issue, the trans activists now say that there must be hashtag no debate because it's not a matter of opinion. And there was an article about coming back to Lawrence Fox. We'll get a fox back in there at some point. So he was on Question Time, obviously, and there was a woman who I've been on Good Morning Britain with who wrote an article saying that racism is not a matter of opinion, right? So there's this idea now, essentially, that you can't discuss things anymore because you have to accept a particular narrative, and if you don't, that automatically makes you racist, transphobic, or whatever. So debate has taken on a very strange kind of meaning, I think, and this no debate thing has taken it to a whole new level.
Yeah, so it's like a debate is just a cover for prejudice.
Exactly.
I remember that interview that you did on Good Morning Britain. I can't remember the name of the woman who was
Dr. Shola something.
Doctor, why are they all doctors? It's amazing, isn't it? It's like they've wheedled their way into the universities.
They've got a PhD.
Spend their time
studies.
Doing a PhD. That's right, gender studies.
That makes them a doctor.
Oh, it's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, I'm diagnosing you as racist. My prognosis is really bad because I'm going to utterly humiliate you. I'm going to drive you out of public life and you might as well be dead.
Any underlying symptoms of transphobia? No? Any history of it in the family?
I believe there's definitely history of all kinds of bigotry in my family. So you were saying about the...
Oh, sorry. The doctor, it was... because I remember the debate, and I remember when she turned to you very early on, and she just went, shh, shh, shh.
Oh, that was another one.
Oh, was that another
one? That was another one. I've had so many of these experiences, Andy.
You are all over the place. Yeah,
being shushed and hashtag no debated and everything else.
That's right, but it's just like, shut up, don't speak, stop now, stop. No, actually, we'd like a rational debate on this one, please. What's your opinion?
Well, fortunately, we're not going to debate that. We're in a consensus that that's a bit silly. But Andy, did anything strike you on your way to recording this podcast that you could also put in this dictionary of words that mean different things now?
I was going to say like the term. That's not the appropriate thing, of white privilege, which is, keeps cropping up, this question of white privilege, of, you know, your sort of, you know, this immutable characteristic determines your entire outlook, your position in life, your character and all the rest of it. But it, something that goes along with it is this thing about unconscious racism. So as we become, you know, more and more tolerant society, and I think Lawrence Fox made that point really well, is you should just always open, when you're accused of any of that, just say, actually, you know, where would you rather live than the UK around now? Is this the most sort of tolerant, sort of, you know, liberally minded sort of time that anyone could possibly live?
People used to say Canada. Until they elected the first openly black president.
But it, you know, it is a very, you know, liberal country that we live in. So the increasing lack of overt racism means it's clearly been driven underground, deep inside the brains of white people, to take the form of, you know, unconscious racism.
But there you go, you have sort of landed on the key thing there, which is that, you know, in throughout history, Irish people have been discriminated against. Slavs have been discriminated against. It's not really, and never has been, one of those things where it's simply white people at the top and everybody else underneath. Because actually there are lots of different ways to find prejudices against people, including people who, you know, ostensibly look like you. And that's sort of where the whole thing about intersectionality, they call it, it all just falls down, because you can find ways of being prejudiced against absolutely everybody.
As Russians can attest. the whole white privilege thing is fascinating, because we've now got to a point where all the research shows that actually white progressives have a more critical view of white people than ethnic minorities. And if you ask white progressives what is holding ethnic minorities back, they are far more likely to say that it's racism than the ethnic minorities.
Right.
So they know better than black people and brown people what's holding them back. And ironically, the research on this is hilarious, because what it shows is the white progressive kind of core group, not the white progressive, the progressive group is the whitest group in society, second only to white supremacists.
And they're all doctors.
Right. So the only, like I always said, the only difference between a Klan rally and a kind of an anti-Trump protest is the amount of vegan food on the table. So there we go. I'm now going to get cancelled for that vegan joke under the law.
Yeah,
I suppose the doctors might have the white coats, but not the hoods. Yes. So they're halfway there.
Good point.
Moving swiftly on, we now come to our final segment of the podcast, which is where we discuss the individuals. Because, of course, at heart, although we like to discuss big ideas and movements, we are all just salacious gossips at heart. Now, I was wondering, Constantine, is there any one individual who has stood out for you in the past few weeks who, I suppose, has really captured your imagination or come to, perhaps, dare I say it, embody the past few months? Anybody that springs to mind?
I think the person that's come out best of the last few weeks is actually the Queen. She secured a hard Mexit, as people keep joking. And I thought it was a very interesting moment, because I think what it reveals is that in a world of where we're so obsessed with personality now and everything is about the individual, the future of the monarchy is going to be interesting, because she's obviously 93 or 94 now. And I'm not sure that someone like Prince Charles would have been able to deal with that situation quite as robustly and as strongly as she did. Mm. So the fate of the monarchy relies on the monarch, and whether that kind of strength of character and that neutrality, which is really the problem with Meghan and Harry that's happened there, is they ceased to be neutral representatives of the monarchy and they started advocating for stuff in a very aggressive way. That's why they got a lot of flack. If the next monarch that we have doesn't have the same approach as the Queen, because, you know, the polls all show that the Queen is extremely popular, but the monarchy really isn't. So how that plays out over the next 10, 15 years is going to be very interesting. But she absolutely smashed it on this whole thing, and I was very impressed by that.
It does seem to bring out two very important things. You know, the Queen represents for people. You know, the monarchy is what people invest in it emotionally, and what they see it as and what it represents. And it is, you know, duty, honor, loyalty, a sense of they're on your side, etc. And then sort of me, it's like I'm going to lecture you, sort of celebrity types carry on the other side. And it just seems like a real culture clash of the two.
It's an interesting thing that all the countries in the world where you might want to live are actually constitutional monarchies.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. That's not an argument for monarchy in and of itself, but kind of, it's a Rory Sutherland makes this point, that it's one of those empirical things that there may not be any direct causation, but the correlation is fascinating. And of course, in Russia, we got rid of our royal family in typical Russian fashion in 1917. So I actually am quite attached to the idea of a monarchy as a kind of just, as long as it remains what it has been, which is a broadly speaking neutral space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the Queen welcoming Donald Trump was an important moment because it just took the heat down mm-hmm. a notch in all of the conversations that we have. She's there to kind of provide a neutral space on behalf of our country for foreign leaders and for us as a country to kind of just go, okay, we can just calm down a little bit. And I think the only way that could happen is a depoliticized role. Mm-hmm. So they need to be very careful, I think, to stay away from becoming embroiled in politics, which on the whole they have been pretty good at. But I think, coming back to the Meghan thing, the reason that they started getting a lot of hate at some point from the media had nothing to do with her race or anything like that. It was the fact that they became very advocate-y on stuff. They started pushing their agenda, or she did in particular. And I think it's very important that for the monarchy not to do that. And avoid that at all costs.
And it's the. I mean, people talk about hypocrisy. So taking what was it, 7 flights in a month or whatever it was, and then lecturing people on climate change. But it's the unaware. It's the inability to. It's the lack of self-awareness that they're even doing it. Is even more insulting. It's not that, you know, I tell you to do one thing and I do something else, but actually telling you to do the thing is the right thing. We all know that. It's just they're not even aware that they're lecturing people, and it just comes across as absolute hectoring, and they live an entirely irresponsible lifestyle where they contribute very little and feel no responsibility to anyone else. And it's almost an infantile state. And I think people recognise that and react against it. I think the other thing is it's interesting, this sort of question of patriotism, because it's a thing that I'm sort of constantly thinking about. And it was funny that Rebecca Long Bailey came out the other day and said, we're going to have a progressive patriotism. And then when someone said, well, what's that? she said, it means something about community. It means loving your community and stroking
now
cats.
Now rats all sing the red flag.
That's right. It's like, she had absolutely no idea. I mean, sorry, it's just, I know this is an aside, but it just shows the utter intellectual bankruptcy of the labour movement. You know, the great thinkers have come out of the left and sort of great ideas have come out of the left, and there's nothing, you prod them now and it's like, what do you actually mean by that? And they just absolutely fall apart.
Well, because they can't say the thing that they're trying to say.
But they're not trying, but they don't believe it. They haven't thought it through, have they? They're just trying to pick words that they think people relate to without any understanding or any intellectual coherence around those, what those words mean or they convey or what they stand for.
And this is where the issue of political correctness is very important, because what's really happened in the Labour Party is it's been captured by a radical fringe, which makes it impossible to talk openly about issues like national identity, like immigration, etc. So anyone who says patriotism, that's considered a dog whistle for those issues. And therefore, they can't really say the things that they need to say to get back working class communities around this country, which is coming back to the point you made much earlier in the podcast. They're represented by these barristers. Actually, those barristers are very representative of the current Labour electorate, because they've squeezed out anyone from a working class background from either running, standing, or indeed supporting the party. I mean, that's what happened in the last election.
Yeah, true.
And their loss and abandonment of working class communities has been total. I mean, we had Paul Embry on the show, a trade union member, socialist, firefighter. He's a great guy. And I was saying to him, look, you should stand as an MP. And he said, well, I can't, because I would not be accepted in the current Labour movement as I am, because I understand that not everyone who wants to control immigration is automatically racist. Right? Mm. That's it. That's enough now to squeeze anyone out. And that's the extent of the Labour Party's transformation.
Ben, have you got a person that's really stood out for you recently?
I have. And in keeping with the theme that we've been going on of spiritual political leaders, but also being very flippant, I'm going to be choosing Pope Francis, who was caught on camera over the festive period assaulting, beating, rendering useless a harmless pilgrim in St. Peter's Square. or something like that. At least I didn't see the footage. That was the person I was going to land on, because for no other reason than here is somebody who is supposed to be, you know, the head of the Catholic Church, infallible, you know, the spiritual leader of millions upon millions of people, having a moment, shall we say, letting his human side slip, letting the mask slip very slightly. And it did just strike me. I actually felt rather sorry for him, because he's an old man. He's got multiple health problems. And he's sort of being, you know, passed around like a rag doll by all of these pilgrims. For, you know, they're all desperate to see him. It's a serious spiritual moment for him. But in that moment, whereas we've spoken about the Queen being, you know, almost perfect and coming out of her situation recently very well, and on the other hand, every single Labour Party candidate performing very badly, there you have somebody very clearly just in the moment letting it slip, you know, not being perfect, but actually it not harming them too much, because there was a human side to it, I thought. Okay, so, Constantine.
Oh, yes.
After all that, I hear that you have a podcast of your own.
I do.
Called Trigonometry.
Podcast and YouTube show. And interestingly, given what we've just been talking about, we were the first people in this country to do a long-form interview with Lawrence Fox, long before he was in the news or on Question Time or anything like that. So we're guilty and responsible. But what we do on Trigonometry is we try to invite guests who have an insight into certain issues, controversial subjects very often, and have a kind of conversation like-hearted like this, but also with a real focus on what the facts are, what the reality is versus what the perception is. And we try to not be afraid to go anywhere. So we've had people on to talk about, you know, race and racism, rape culture, you know, men and women, why are men more violent, all of this, kind of evolutionary psychologists talking about the differences between men and women physically and in terms of our brains, all that kind of stuff. And it's doing very well. We're very happy with how it's going. We've had a whole range of guests, and we try and get people from across the spectrum. So on the issue of Brexit, we've had anyone from, you know, Lord Adonis, a popular figure with Spectator listeners, I'm sure, all the way through to, you know, hardcore Brexiteers like Brendan O'Neill. We try to create a space where these conversations can be had.
Well, that's good. And where can we find that podcast?
It's on YouTube. Just search for Trigonometry. We're on Twitter at TriggerPod, on all the social media at TriggerPod, and on all the podcast apps as well as TriggerPod.
Well, fantastic. Constantine, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And you can follow Constantine on Twitter at Constantine Kissin. And if you're at an unusually loose end, you can also follow us at AndyShaw1 and at Benedict Spence. That's all from us. Join us for more wine and frivolity at the next Spectator Life podcast. Oh.